It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome back. I'm Jim Stevens, the host of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm really excited to have Janet Keller with me today. Janet is a brand new member of our team. This is her first week with Sandler Training. Welcome, Janet.
Hi.
So you have been hired to be a part of the exceptional team here at Sandler Training because...
I keep asking myself that, but you hired me too late, so sorry.
It's her high ego score. She
yes.
is really self-confident. Janet Keller's background is she's been in banking, she's been in financial planning. So, Janet, tell our listeners a little bit about who are you and your past history.
Well, I'm a single mom of two boys. I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. So when I'm not at work trying to just meet as many people as possible, that's my life. I go out and just love them for fun. I like to play sports. I play on a women's flag football team. So that's my family pretty much up here. What else would you like to know?
That's awesome. Flag football, that's pretty cool. I bet that's fun too. Is it all women or men and women?
It's all women.
Oh.
So a bunch of really tough women. We just have a lot of fun together.
And can we come watch you sometime?
I'm not going to tell you when those games are.
That would be awesome. I would really enjoy that. Well, I think it's Janet's competitive nature and her vibrant personality that make her really a great addition to our team. We've hired Janet to help us in a business development role. So she's going to be calling on business owners, managers, and business professionals to help them discover if they have a need for some leverage to help them get to the next level of their professional development. Part of the reason Janet was interested is she came to us as a client. So share with the listeners your background as a client of Sandler and what you learned while you were in that role.
So I originally came for a one-day boot camp. So MassMutual, who I worked for prior to this, they hired and had me come and attend a one-day workshop, and I didn't learn enough that day. Like, I wanted so much more. I was thinking that you guys only did one-day boot camps, and I was frustrated because I was like, I want so much more. And then I found out that you guys did do a weekly training. And so I took the initiative to sign myself up and do that on my own.
Yeah, not only signed herself up, but paid for it herself. So
yeah.
Really recognizing the need to invest in yourself, which helps make you what we call a product of the product, somebody who drinks the Kool-Aid and believes in the system. What have you seen about the Sandler system that's really helped you?
Well, what I like is it helps me to, I feel like I'm a really bad salesperson. I've always thought that, but I really feel like I'm a really good communicator. And I'm really good at asking good questions. So Sandler gave me a guidelines of exactly what lane to stay in, what questions to ask so that I could not overthink it and just do the same process with every single person.
Yeah, once you have a proven system that works, you just work the plan and you're going to get very predictable results. So this is your first week. Give us some highlights.
I've attended a lot of training. I feel like I'm standing in front of a fire hydrant trying to capture a bunch of water with a thimble. So it's been fun, but it's exciting going out, just talking about it, talking to people that just in a different capacity about Sandler.
And those friends that you have in your networking circles, what do they say when you tell them you've joined the Sandler team?
Oh, they're really excited for me. I have a great BNI family that is very supportive, very excited, just saying that this is a perfect fit for me, and I 100% agree with them.
Well, we think it's a perfect fit too, and we're really glad to have you as a part of the team. Janet, one major hurdle she covered is that her name starts with a J. We have Jim and Joan and Justin and Jason and Janet. So our whole team, what's the odds of that? That's pretty fun.
Well, I got that. So I might start going by Melissa, my middle name. We'll see. Possibly.
So, Janet, tell our listeners, where did you get your experience in really engaging with other people?
Well, this will be hard for you to believe, but when I was in middle school, Jim, I was extremely shy and I never wanted to talk to anybody.
Really?
So when I got to high school, I joined FFA and I started doing a lot of public speaking. The first one was a creed speaking, which every freshman does this initial, they give you a script, you practice it, you do it. And I won at the chapter level and thought I was big deal and just got hooked from public speaking from there. And then I became a state officer in FFA. For the
wow.
state of Idaho, there's only 6 a year. There's about 1,000, a little over 1,000 members. And I was one of the 6 people people that got to be in charge of
the whole
chapter for the whole state. Yeah.
That is awesome. What a great opportunity.
Yeah.
So did your parents recognize that and encourage you to do that? Or is that something you sought out on your own?
Well, when people tell me to do something, I go the opposite way. So of course my parents did not encourage me on that one. Like they didn't discourage me, but they didn't tell me, oh, join FFA, start doing all the public speaking.
Because they knew it'd backfire.
Yeah. That's not how you work with me.
Awesome. That's terrific. Well, Jana, we're really thrilled to have you as a part of the team and looking forward to hearing about your success. So now that I know how to motivate you, don't sell anything.
You've got it, Jim.
Don't go find new clients. Thank you all. We'll be back just after this. And welcome to the weekend. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. I'm the president and CEO of the local Sandler training office here in Idaho. I invite a keynote Sandler trainer each week from around the world to discuss different components of the Sandler system. It's a highly effective sales and management training system. And this week, my guest is Mike Jones. Mike is from Akron, Ohio. Is that right, Mike?
That is correct.
Welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jim. I appreciate it.
So let's start the program by just sharing with the listeners, how did you ever get involved in Sandler training?
Gosh, as far back as I can remember, I've always been in tune with the needs of other people, and I'll pass my mom for sharing that with me very early on. And the one thing that I noticed as I played sports throughout my career and just been involved in different groups is it's not so much what people are doing or the environments that they're in that determine true success as it is what's going on between their ears. So I sort of latched on to that, and, you know, I taught juvenile delinquents algebra right out of college, and I've always just been kind of dialed into what people are thinking and what makes them tick, and a lot of the issues that are self-inflicted, I feel, really are just derived from their thought process. So I used to own a commercial truck tire business in the Bronx, New York, and I heard of Sandler, and I didn't know what it was, but it was non-traditional, and that was intriguing to me. So when I moved back to Ohio, I sort of dialed into the local franchise and just started to learn about it and fell in love with the whole concept of it being more of a mindset than a move, and it just kind of spoke to me.
I like that thought that it really is a mindset. What in particular intrigued you about the Sandler system that made you say, I want to do this for the rest of my life?
Just the ability to impact others and to help people get out of their own way. And, you know, the passion that we have around here at our office is when that light switch goes off in their head and they sort of get all life's epiphanies in relation to selling and how they execute in front of a prospective client. That's kind of what our passion is. That's really what gets us excited. So to be able to do that day in and day out, very, very important to us. And, you know, oftentimes we hear, go find something you love to do and turn it into a hobby. And if you do that for a living, you'll never work a day in your life. And we're bought into that.
That's great. Love it. So, Mike, you mentioned something earlier about these self-inflicted wounds that cause from our self-limiting thinking. And I think that is so true. But the challenge is most people may not be even aware of some of the traps that they've been fallen into, like their comfort zone or other things. Kick us off. What would you suggest by way of opening eyes to see where we're trapped?
You know, it's interesting that you make the comment most people aren't even aware, and that's really what I think is important for us to do as thought leaders in the business that we're in, is to help create the awareness, help people understand why things are happening. And I sort of believe that there's really two parts to that, Jim. I think the first part is just someone's awareness and ability and wanting to take risks in life and understand the difference between healthy risk and unhealthy risk. So really, how people are conducting their day in and day out behaviors, and are they challenging themselves and pushing the envelopes? There's a saying we have around here, old ways won't open new doors. So if we're trying to create newness and do things different, we have to understand that we have to behave differently. And that's where the second part comes in. You know, life rewards action. And here's why. Our brain is wired to protect us at all costs. And we all have a habit that doesn't serve us well. It's called hesitation. And that hesitation factor was put into us by our creator, and that creates awareness for us that something isn't right. It's what keeps us alive. And sometimes our brain tells us to dive into it and fight. Sometimes it tells us to get out of there. And there's a spotlight effect, it's called, that the brain magnifies risk to create awareness so people pull back. That's why motivation's tricky. You know, when you're faced with a challenge or you're doing the things you know that you're truly capable of doing and pushing your comfort zone, your mind, how you feel, is going to tell you to abort. Get the hell out of here. Yeah. And that's the feeling that we need to recognize is just a natural part of the creatures that we are, and we have to make a choice to fight through it. We cannot wait till all the feelings are telling us it's ready. All the lights are green. It'll never happen.
That is such an awesome point. I think flashing through my mind are some people I know who are very pensive and tentative, and they tend to overthink things and engage in the battle after the war's over, so to speak. And yet there's some people like me who I could be easily accused of, rightfully, of being a little bit reckless.
How do you
find that balance, Mike?
And ironically enough, I find that balance in other people. And I think it's important for us to surround ourselves with other people. And people that don't get emotionally involved in the things that we get involved in, and they can be our filter, our stopgap, our point of reason that says, now you need to take a step back and analyze what you're doing. I think birds of a feather flock together. That's something my dad has always taught me growing up. So the more we can surround ourselves with people that understand that there is a better way, there is a bigger opportunity for us, if we can just learn to get out of our own way, the more that we get in tune with what it is that we're after. And that comes a lot quicker when you're surrounded by those types of individuals.
So help us through the mechanics of getting out of our own way. If I'm entering into a circumstance or situation that fight or flight emotion kicks in and I'm hesitating to take action, how do I get outside of my old habits? I loved your quote, old ways that don't open new doors.
Well, I think that there's a lot of sort of self-study and pre-work, if you call it that. I don't think that at that moment is the time to start thinking. I think at that moment is the time to start implementing. And I think that how we think in quiet time, what I say to myself day in and day out, what do I think about when I'm alone? Those are all practices and behaviors that get me ready for those moments. And, you know, just like most of the other professions that are out there, people have to prepare. They have to study. They have to take educational courses. But for some reason, salespeople, we don't do that. And we're not taught to do that. And I think how we're preparing and what types of goals we're setting for ourselves really puts us in the position to recognize the moments where this is a moment where I need to knuckle down and I need to think, why am I feeling this way? Is this a comfort zone thing for me? Do I truly believe that there's a better way? And maybe this is one of my few seconds each day that I need to take a healthy risk and just kind of see what happens. And I'm not so concerned about the outcome of what happens, right or wrong. That's really not what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about, are you willing at least to try something different? Because we can always learn a lesson and make changes and make improvements for future opportunities.
So you're telling us we really need to have set aside time where we have planned and prepared to take a risk so that we can capture opportunity. I think that's a brilliant idea. If you're somebody who tends to hesitate, if I know those physiological signs my body gives me that I'm hesitating, I can pause and say, is now the time to implement my plan of action and feel the fear and do it anyway. So Mike and Sandler, we talk about burning bridges, which is a metaphor I'd like you to explain to our listeners and share with them the three primary bridges we seek to help our clients eliminate.
Well, the three primary bridges, Jim, are hope, comfort, and reliance. And I think the way we build a comfort zone is with those three things. We hope things continue to happen. We hope that I get this deal. We hope that life treats me fairly. We put ourselves in position of comfort because that's how we're wired. You know, we seek pleasure and we look for the things sometimes in life that provide us with that feel good. And as a result of those, we rely on an awful lot of things. That tends to put the actionable part outside of ourselves. You know, most people look for the external changes in their environment so they get those internal shifts of happiness. And I think we have that backward. You know, I think there are internal changes that we need to make in order to create those external shifts in events in order for us to get the things that we're after. One of my favorite quotes, got this thing written down everywhere, and it's by Muhammad Ali. And he said, the fight is won or lost far away from witnesses. It's won behind the lines and in the gym and out there on the road long before I dance under those lights.
Wow.
And that's really saying, by the time I step into that ring, the outcome's already determined. You know, it happens way before the event. And I really see the situations that we find ourselves in life a lot like that.
You mentioned internal changes. You're suggesting we need to condition our mind. Expand on that just a little more.
I think that if nothing changes, nothing changes. And part of what needs to change is our thought process, how we're thinking. And a good tool for that is a journal. And I fought that concept for a very long time. I'm from a family of boys. It just wasn't something that we did. My perception was that it was a diary and it's not something that I'm going to get involved involved in, because quite frankly, my brothers would beat me up. You know, but one of the people that I surrounded myself with said, write down the things in there that you feel are important and a new way of believing about yourself, but make them personal, positive, and present tense. So I'm not going to write things like, I want to have, or I want to be. I'm writing things personal and positive, present tense, as if it's happening today. So I am a successful person. I am overcoming obstacles every day. I am equipped to deal with adversity. And those types of thoughts, when we repeat those over and over and over, we really drill them down into our subconscious. And those are the types of things that we need to be acting upon without thinking throughout our day.
Terrific. My guest today is Mike Jones. Mike is a Sandler trainer in Akron, Ohio. Mike, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out and connect with you.
My phone number is 330-926-9924. And Jim, the listeners are certainly welcome to shoot me an email at mjones@sandler.com.
Next up, we're going to go behind the business, where we get to meet the people and hear the story behind local and regional businesses. This is Sandler trainer Jim Stevens. If you'd like to learn more about our programs here in Idaho, our website is crossroads.sandler.com. Listen to all our shows or reach out to us at 208-429-9275, and we'll show you the way. Juniper, you've been a client of Sandler's for, what, maybe 3 months now?
Yeah, just a few months.
Yeah, and what do you think so far?
I have to tell you that our sales team absolutely loves the training. It is phenomenal. What we've really learned in selling, especially with residential real estate, is it's really about people and understanding people and communicating to people. And I really feel that the sales skills that myself and my salespeople have developed in that area has been tremendous just in a matter of 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Now, one of the things people say to me when they hear about our program is, every single week, and in the program you're involved in, it's 2 hours every week.
Yeah.
And I know one of your pushbacks has been, that's too much time. What do you think now?
It is a lot of time. However, I think the return on investment far outweighs the amount of time that we spend. In our company at Keller Williams, we always kind of have this motto that amateurs practice till they get it right and professionals practice until they can't get it wrong. And so I think that's really what that 2 hours does, is it's about becoming a professional.
And welcome to Behind the Business. My name's Jim Stevens. My guest today is Nathan Berry. Nathan is the founder of ConvertKit. It's a business that Nathan built because he needed it. You started as a blogger and you wanted a way to manage the contacts, the people that made inquiries for your blogs, and here comes this business. Give our listeners just the thumbnail sketch of what you do for your clients.
Yeah, so we're email marketing for professional bloggers. We're a software company of about 25 people. And if you've ever used like a MailChimp or a Constant Contact, we're like that, but specific for professional bloggers.
And so you built a team of 25 full-time employees. They're located in different locations all over the globe. And you've been in business how long?
4 years.
4 years. The first 2 years were kind of slogging it.
Right.
And then the last 2 years have been exponential growth.
Yeah, so we've added an employee a month basically for the last 2 years.
So how do you find and select the right employee when most of your operation is scattered?
Right. So the first thing and the biggest benefit with a remote company, sometimes people think the benefit is that you don't have to pay for office space. That's not the benefit. Office space is cheap. The biggest benefit is that you get to hire the best talent wherever you find them, and you don't have to have them live in a specific city. So the first thing that we do is we make sure to be a very transparent and public company. So if you want to know how much revenue we make, our exact process of doing business, you know, what we learned last week in business, we write a blog about all of that. And so the first thing we get is all of these people reading our blog and following along. So then when we want to put out and, you know, say, hey, we're hiring two new engineers, or we're hiring a customer support person, then we get hundreds of applications because of that blog.
So the blog is driving the people who might want to apply.
Yeah. And then the great thing is you get a lot fewer applications who are like, I want this job because I want a job.
Need a job.
Right. Instead, you get applications where people are like, I love your platform, I'm a customer, or I love your, you know, I love your mission, I love what you're about. And you don't have to explain that initial context. And then when it comes to getting more applicants in, because we want to pull from a larger pool, then we'll post job listings on sites that are specific to people who want to work remotely. Mm-hmm. So there's one called weworkremotely.com, and we'll get lots of good applicants from there.
Mm. So how do you make that final decision to hire?
Yeah, so we look for a couple of things. Because the majority of our communication is written, we ask a lot of written questions. So like when we were hiring for a sales director recently, we were asking questions in writing of like, hey, if the sales team you're leading had these problems, how would you approach it? And some people respond with like 5 pages and you're like, oh, that's not going to cut it. And some people are like, well, I'd just see what the problems were and then I'd solve them. You know, and so you can kind of eliminate people at both ends of the spectrum.
Right, right.
And you can hire the people who are the great writers, because usually a great writer is a great communicator. And so we look for
great
that
idea.
Really a lot.
Great idea. We'll give you contact information in case someone listening would like to check you guys out.
Yeah, so just go to ConvertKit.com, or if you want to get in touch with me, just Nathan@ConvertKit.com.
Awesome. We'll be back with more of Nathan just after this next segment of the Sandler Training Hour. What would you say to somebody who's thinking about Sandler training? They've thought about getting involved and they just haven't pulled the trigger. What would you tell them?
Well, I would strongly encourage it. I think what I've learned in Sandler is to ask questions. That's what really sells. And what I've learned with Sandler is stripping line is a good tactic. If you take something away, you really get it back. So I would ask the question, what are you looking for in your life to have change? What kind of changes are you looking for?
So talk a little bit about the ongoing reinforcement element. How does that help?
It's very helpful. It's coaching. It's not counseling. It's coaching because, first of all, Jim's always available. I mean, if I have a situation, I could just send Jim an email and he's available to me on a personal or professional basis. The coaching that we get allows us to put our own thoughts into perspective and use them for the long haul. It's not just a Band-Aid.
And welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm the president and CEO of Sandler Training here in Idaho, Jim Stevens. I invite a keynote Sandler trainer each week from around the world to discuss different components of the world-renowned and highly successful Sandler training system. My guest today is Mike Jones. Mike is from Akron. Mike, you also have an office in another city in Ohio, don't you?
Yes, Columbus.
Columbus and Akron. Wow. And most of us out in Idaho, we don't know where that is, but it's somewhere east of the Mississippi.
That's correct. Yes.
So we've been talking with Mike about what are some of the self-limiting programming that we have downloaded in our minds that we may not even be aware of. And as Sandler trainers, we believe it's our calling to wake people up to the things that are inhibiting them from the success that they really want. Mike has been sharing with us that if you're going to be successful, the old ways of doing things will not open new doors. So we really need to develop an awareness and an ability to take risks. We need to recognize that life rewards actions, and we need to be conditioning ourselves to be aware of some traps. So the three traps, Mike, that you mentioned, hope, comfort, and reliance, paint the picture for us. How do I go about recognizing the bridge and then burning that bridge?
Well, really, I think that people, for the most part, think about things to the potential that they have, and that creates a lot of internal turmoil and unhappiness. I can remember times that I would drive around in the Bronx, New York, going from company to company trying to sell them, and I wouldn't think about things I was doing at the moment. I'd think about things that I wanted to attain or I wanted to accomplish. And a lot of times, it's things that we don't think that we're capable of achieving. And that's why I think that Americans are so dialed in with the high-paid, highly publicized athlete, because they, in our minds, have figured it out, and that's something that we envy. We envy the athlete superstar. We envy the movie star. And we tend to look at these people in public as if they're up on some pedestal. Not that they shouldn't be respected for what they do, but I think we separate ourselves from that group. I don't think we feel like that we can have anything and everything that we want in life. And I think that that kind of holds us back a little bit.
So it's almost this feeling that I'm not worthy, or I don't have what it takes to have the kind of success I see other people having. And you talked about one of the tools you have found extremely effective in changing your thinking is journaling. When we talk about journaling, many people think of it as Dear Diary, which it is not. It's mainly taking what I am thinking, putting it in print so my brain can now process. So take us through, how did you get from, I've got brothers that will beat me to a pulp if I tell them I'm journaling, to actually being a disciplined journaler, and what has that done for you?
Well, I think that there's a point in time in everybody's life when it comes to changing how they do what they do. they hit what I would call a personal threshold moment. And unfortunately, sometimes that personal threshold moment is forced upon them, and it's not something that people choose to have. For example, oftentimes we hear that people don't make a lifestyle change till they have a heart attack, and that heart attack forced a personal threshold moment on them, so now they're going to make changes. Well, I don't want to go through that extreme pain in order to do things different. Sometimes in life, we have to create those moments. And it got to the point where I was just tired of tolerating things that were happening to me. And I asked for help, which is something that I wasn't accustomed to doing. You know, growing up the way that I grew up and surrounded by the environment that I was surrounded with, you know, corn-fed, hand-spanked, you be a man and you take care of business on your own. So for me to ask for help was a real struggle for me.
Amen, brother.
And I can remember after mortgaging my home to buy this Sanda franchise and being 6 months into the business, my wife saying to me, this can't be everything. This cannot be what we get for the sacrifices and the choice that we made. And she was right. And part of my looking or longing for an answer was, what would a person who has what you want think? What would they think? What would they believe? How would they act? How would they look? And those are the things that you need to start to write down, and you have to envision it. From that moment forward, it really honed in on things that I was told growing up, that things always happen twice. First, we think about it, and then we manifest those thoughts into our actions. So if I want to act a certain way, I have to think a certain way first. And part of my epiphany into this whole journaling thing was, I have to get this stuff down, and I've got to repeat it, and I've got to write it, and I've got to invest my thoughts and energy into that every single day until I start to see things happening. And once those thoughts started to transition from my head into my physical world is when things really started to get exciting. And that's when I really honed in on the belief and the buy-in that if it's to be, it's up to me. I've got to create my own destiny, and I've got to set out my own course and just win the day. Each and every day, I have to take action to just move me a step forward in the direction that I'm trying to go.
So if thoughts precede action, then we need to start by being aware of our thoughts. And I've had conversations with people who have said, yeah, you know, that self-talk stuff, I don't really believe in it. But the fact is, Mike, they do it every day. So unpack that for us.
It's just an awareness. I think there are so many things that come from our society that we can't tune out. I mean, maybe we can, but we see ads, we see negativity, we hear the news, we hear unhealthy thoughts from our peers, we see and watch unhealthy things in the TV and in the music that we listen to, that there has to be a counter to that. And I think part of getting clarity on that picture is just creating that stuff. What's my offset for everything else that I'm getting hit with? And as you look at the overall success of people, and if you could stack rank those people on a scale of 0 to 10, there's only maybe 20 or 15% at the top of that group that truly gets it and how they maximize their capabilities. They have to be doing something different. You know, I don't think that they were just put on this earth and all of a sudden they're better than everybody else just by luck. Something that they are doing are putting them in those positions. So studying those people and reading their autobiographies about what makes them tick and how they do it. And I'll tell you, it comes down to one word, and it's action. They just act differently than the rest of us.
That's a great point. So let's talk about managers who might be listening to us and the bridge of hope that might be keeping them from the heroic action necessary to change their company. Share with the listeners, what are some of the bridges that you've seen managers have to deal with?
It's just people's comfort zones. It's people's level of acceptance for what they're doing and how they're doing it. And I think it would be great if everybody we hired came committed, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just why companies need leaders.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so how can I as a leader recognize the gaps in my people between where they're at versus what their potential is? How can I lead them to close that gap, not just tell them to close that gap?
Yeah, hoping they're going to change isn't going to work.
And if I'm a manager, I always want to look in the mirror rather than out the window. And if I'm going to look in the mirror, I have to ask myself, am I really exhibiting through my actions and behaviors the best that I can be? Am I holding myself accountable to the standard that I set for myself? It's hard to hold other people accountable if, as a leader, we don't hold ourselves accountable.
What do I do to stir it up? How do I burn that bridge?
Well, I think the first thing is let's create transparency, a factor that most people shy away from. Whenever there's transparency, there's exposure. And whenever there's exposure, there's uncomfortableness. But for true change to take place. I think that's where organizations and business people need to go. They need to find people that they're comfortable being transparent with. And a lot of times that starts with the leader. I tell my team this all the time. In the business that we're in, being agents of change, we are going to be the topic of conversation, both good and bad. And we just got to be okay with that. And we have to really understand and recognize that there comes a point in time in our journey where we cannot be undercover and on the rise at the same time. We have to expose and be transparent with each other in everything that we're doing and asking each other for the help. So if I have a respect with my peers and the people that I'm supervising have a healthy respect for me, now I'm going to create the environment and the culture for learning and growing and challenging each other and stepping outside our comfort zone. I really believe that's where it needs to start.
So you're telling me I have to deny my Midwest upbringing and be willing to be vulnerable. Wow, that's going to be hard. Thanks again, Mike Jones. After another segment of Behind the Business, we go in depth with Entrepreneur Radio to learn more about our local or regional success stories. If you'd like to share your story with us, give me a call at 208-429-9275 and we'll take care of the rest. This is Sandler trainer Jim Stevens. Take a look at our website, crossroads.sandler.com, or email me with your comments and contact information at crossroads@sandler.com if you'd like to learn more. And welcome back to Behind the Business. In this segment of our program, we get to meet the people and hear the story behind some local businesses. We actually have a national business here. Nathan Berry is the founder of ConvertKit. Nathan wrote a software program to service his own client base when he was primarily blogging, and that's grown into an organization. He employs 25 people from all over the world, really. So, Nathan, let's talk about in managing people's activity, especially if they're remote. By the time you look at the results, it's too late.
Right.
You know, if I'm looking at financial numbers, that's past history. I need to look at what are we doing to get there. So in our jargon, we call it KPIs, key performance indicators. What kind of activities do you expect of your people that would help you as an owner manage that they're doing the right things?
Yeah, so the first thing that we do is we really focus on trust. And so we don't, you know, look over someone's shoulder to make sure that they're working or care about time spent in a seat. We care about the results they get. So within that, you're right that you have to have the leading indicators and the, you know, the lag indicators. And it's taken me a while to learn this on a bunch of different teams, right? Because sales and marketing, well, they're different from each other, but then also they're different from the customer success team. So like on the customer success team, you know, you're answering tickets. And so the lead indicator there would be number of replies that you have. You know, we measure how long you spend on each reply. Huh. And it's not necessarily that less time is better, but it's another indicator of the quality.
Just tells you what your people are doing.
Yeah. And then we can also track it all the way through to, we get happiness scores back from those customers. So that would start to be one of the lag indicators.
Right.
And then even further on is how many of those customers canceled. So in the industry, we call it churn. And so we look at the percentage of customers that canceled. And so we're still working on tying all of that together. But, you know, there the lag indicator would be happiness and churn. And then on the marketing side, you know, they're trying to drive visits to the website and then signups for like demo requests. Mm. Those would be the lead indicators.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the lag indicators there would be, you know, we're trying to determine quality. And so that would be revenue and then also that churn number.
Do people sign up for a test drive? Do you have some version of a test drive?
Yeah, we do. And so often if you come in, we'll find out a month later if whatever channel we went after, maybe it resulted in low quality customers who churned out after a month or two.
And then you can look at the analytics of what was our strategy and maybe our strategy was off.
Right.
As opposed to our responsiveness.
Yeah. And so that's what we do on a couple teams. I still don't know on the engineering team what good lead indicators or lag indicators would be.
Yeah.
Lag indicators, I know. It's like software quality. It's what features we ship. The lead indicators are hard because like lines of code written would be a terrible lead indicator.
Right. Because it may not be quality code.
Right.
Give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you, Nathan.
Yeah. Just check us out at ConvertKit.com. And my email is Nathan@ConvertKit.com.
We're going to be back with the final installment of Nathan just after this next segment of the Sandler Training Hour. You've been in the program for what, 2-3 months maybe?
Yeah.
If that much.
Yeah.
What do you think so far?
I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Have you had enough of the Kool-Aid to be addicted yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I'm looking forward to
it. So you're just at that point right now where it's interesting. Tell me a little more.
Well, it takes the old thinking, turns it around about 180 degrees or thereabouts, and delivers what I believe to be a pretty decent solution based on what I used to think. if that makes any sense. It's almost the direct antithesis of what my old behaviors were in a sales environment that stopped working. They did work for a while, and for some reason or another, they just stopped working. There's a gap, you know, and now I can see where the Sandler training and the techniques that Sandler provides will allow me to fill that gap. And I'll tell you what, that gap is, it could be 70-80% of the size of the whole picture.
Right.
You know, I was getting 20% closure with, you know, out of, 20 out of, say, 1,000 calls, and now I can see how this will work and be able to kind of close that gap.
Sandler Training can show you how and why salespeople fail. They'll share the most common mistakes and how to avoid them. Sandler Training programs will guide managers and their teams with tips, techniques, and proven methods to close the deal. Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. This segment of our program, I interview local and regional entrepreneurs, and I ask them to share the story about how did they get in business, what do they do. Through hearing their stories, I find that I certainly get inspired. My guest today is my friend Linder Jones. Linder has been a client of ours for, I don't know, what, 2 or 3 years, Linder?
About right, yeah.
Yeah, well, welcome to the program. Glad to have you on.
Thank you.
Tell our listeners a little bit about Studio Linder Architects.
Studio Linder Architects is a residential architectural firm, and we work mainly with homeowners that are frustrated about their home not functioning well. They don't have room for family to come and visit for a long period of time, and they're embarrassed by the way the outside of their house looks, so they don't have friends over. And they've heard horror stories about working with architects that they design above their budget, and then they can't afford to do it, and they're paralyzed by the process of working with planning. So we help them find ways to enrich their lives with designs that make sense, that work within a reasonable budget, and then we just take the mystery out of the entire process.
Wow.
So they're delighted when it's done.
You know, having worked in the industry for years, actually, I think one of the most overwhelming things people who are thinking about remodeling don't realize is how many decisions they have to make. When you say overwhelming, I really think it is. So share with our listeners a little bit about how you assist in that decision-making process to take some of the stress out.
Sure, you're right. It is overwhelming, and most of the time they don't realize it. They want to design in a couple of weeks, even if it's a kitchen or a bathroom that we're working on. So we take them through a systematic approach. Here's the first step. Let's figure out what the challenges are that need to be solved for. Look at each of those pieces. Look at your existing home, and how can we find ways to solve for the challenges? And so we'll deal with that. And at some point, we say, let's talk about appliances. And so there's a plan that they get to see of what are the steps and what are the decisions that will need to be made and when, so that they can relax and take care of it one step at a time. But it's a fun process for them when they get in.
And then how involved do you stay once the design is done? Is that, are you pretty much out of the picture, or are you involved during the remodeling process?
Good. I think it's always beneficial to homeowners that have been working with the designer or an architect to keep them involved, because there's been this long process of developing a design, and there's a lot of things that sometimes aren't transferable in the way of drawings or specifications, and they need to be seen and talked about. But some clients feel like they're ready to take it on themselves and manage construction with a contractor, so they go about it and then call me when that hasn't worked out. Better if they would include me.
And I bet a high percentage of those people who decide to go it on their own end up calling you.
Yes, they do. And by that time, they probably spent money. They would have been better if they had called me first.
Right, right. So give some advice to our listeners. You've been an entrepreneur, an individual business owner for years. How did you get started?
Oh, okay. In fifth grade, I remember daydreaming and looking at a window that it was a hopper window, so it pulled in from the top end, and I was trying to figure out how that thing worked, and I was in a class. All of a sudden, I heard the teacher talking about somebody who made difference in people's lives by the buildings. they made. It caught my attention.
Wow.
And from then on, I thought about, wait, that person, and I didn't know that she was talking about an architect. I just knew that there was some difference. I wanted to figure out what that was. When I graduated from college, and it was a design program, didn't have a job, tried to figure out what to do, I went back to my roots. My dad was a contractor, so I started a construction firm. That got me going, and then I found that, you know, I could apply my design skills to that. And when time came, I was able to apply for and receive an architect's license. So I was able to meld construction along with design and business and be able to help my clients succeed.
You know, I don't know that people recognize the value that that brings to the table, but most architects that I know don't have a real working hands-on experience in the field. And I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier that it's actually fairly easy to design something that's either not practical or there's an easier way to get it done that would cost less money. So marrying a background in remodeling and construction with the skill set that you have now as a designer, I think that's a pretty unique combination. Do you?
It is, and you're correct. There's very few architects that have had that opportunity. There are some that have intentionally gone out and worked for a builder after school or before they got their license because they wanted that experience. They saw the value in it. I think that the way around it, if you can't hire an architect that has those skills, is make sure you bring a contractor in early on so that you can meld the two, the design and the construction, to make that work better.
Good advice. So let's pretend there's a listener out there thinking, Studio Linder Architects, I think I'd like to interview this guy or give Linder a call. How would they contact you, Linder?
Well, they can find me on a website at www.studiolinder.com. If they want to call me directly, I'm more than willing to take their call, and that would be 408-891-0716. And I also have an email address. And by phone number, you can also text me. I have an email address if they want to do that, and that's linder@studiolinder.com.
That phone number, one more time, is 408-891-0716. Give some advice out there for somebody who is fairly new in the trades, thinking about taking a career move towards something that you've done. What would you tell them?
Need a passion. I love working with homeowners. So if you find that you want to design outside of and not have that interaction with homeowners, because it can be a challenge. I love the challenge. You know, don't go that way. But if you like that challenge of designing for someone else and helping them achieve this beauty that they have in their mind about their home and what it would look like and what it would feel like and what people would think about it, go get the education, get the experience, and get yourself licensed.
Good advice. Great advice. Linder Jones, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for including me, Jeff.
We will be back just after this commercial break with the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. My name is Jim Stevens. I'm your host. We can be reached at crossroads.sandler.com. That's crossroads.sandler.com. We will be back right after this.
The beautiful thing about Sandler is that it really gets to the heart of communication between a person who has a product or service and the potential client who's able to use that to be better. And Sandler really breaks that down, opens up the lines of communication, helps both parties win through the relationship.
And welcome back to the final installment of Behind the Business. My guest today is the founder of ConvertKit, Nathan Berry. Nathan, we've been talking about, how do I hire the right people? How do I manage their behavior so that I'm getting the results I want? And just working to tie all of that together, what is the secret formula for making sure you, as the owner, are getting return on investment for the huge payroll that you've
right.
got?
Yeah, so I mean, we mentioned earlier that trust is a big factor. I realize there's one thing in the hiring process that I do that probably isn't common elsewhere, is that I hire a lot of people who have worked for themselves before. And so they're already used to working remotely, and they've often run their own company in the past. And so they're very results-driven rather than time in the chair or time in the office driven. And so that helps a lot. And we just set the expectation that, hey, if you want to leave during the middle of the day and go do something else for a while, that is totally fine. We don't even care that you hit 40 hours a week exactly, but know that everyone else in the company is very driven. We only care about the end results of what you do in that position. And so the bar is set very, very high. But however you want to accomplish it during the week, that's totally up to you.
What's your turnover rate when it comes to hiring and then people who wash out or don't make it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. We've fired two people, and we've had two people leave. So I guess out of 29 total, we've had four. And, you know, when two people left, I had to ask myself, like, okay, what went wrong?
Why did they leave?
And... yeah, but both of them were pursuing their own ventures. And so that's the downside of hiring entrepreneurial people.
Yeah.
Is that sometimes they want to be entrepreneurs.
So when you hire them, are you making them sign a non-compete or a non-disclosure?
No, I'm very open and transparent. So, like, you can even go on our website and see our exact revenue numbers today. So, you know, there's some high-level stuff there that our lawyers make us do, but I probably wouldn't even enforce it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really interesting business model. You're a trusting soul.
Yes, let's see where it gets me.
Well, it's gotten you pretty well so far. What advice would you give to someone who, take me for example, Nathan, I'm more of a controlling manager. How do I learn to let go?
Yeah, I would just try it and say, give people not only the final outcome that you want, but also take a step back and tell them why you want that. So give them a bit more of the reasoning behind it, and then make yourself available and say, hey, if you need anything, I have this time blocked out, or come into my office, you know, send me an email, whatever. I'm here to help. But give them the clear outcome, why you want it, and then they can think on their own and see how they do. Some people are not made to work in that environment.
One thing I would say about Nathan's system is he's designed it to attract the right people. And so clearly identifying who is the right employee and then building the system to bring the right person in is going to help keep you from hiring people that just don't fit.
Right.
Give your contact information, Nathan, in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, we're at ConvertKit.com and just Nathan@ConvertKit.com.
Fantastic. Great guest you've been. Thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to be back with the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. Here's a quick testimonial from one of our clients, Susan Jernigan, about our coaching program.
Of course, you were great to come in and help me with my management team and help me build some leadership skills that I was lacking. It's one thing to volunteer a lot and serve on committees. It's another thing to run a company. And Jim actually met with us and our management team and helped solidify those relationships and learn how we can work better as a team and grow the company to the next level. You were wonderful and helpful to me in a coaching hour once a week. We had a set time that we would meet, and he would let me unload on him. He was kind of my business link. I guess that's the only way I can say it, is really you were my business shrink that helped me get through some very difficult times of learning construction. And at 52 years old, I feel like I'm just now getting a grip on the company. I've been back for 5 years now, and I feel like with your help, Jim, I definitely think that we have a very, very bright future in our area.
And welcome back to the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm the president and CEO of Sandler Training for Idaho, Jim Stevens. I invite Sandler trainers worldwide to discuss the highly successful Sandler training system. And this week, my guest is Mike Jones. Mike is from Ohio. He's been sharing with us about what are some of the traps that we fall into, a comfort zone that's created by hoping things will change, or a comfort zone that's relying too much on past performance. And Mike has given us the suggestion, really the call to action, to change your current situation by first engineering your thoughts to create the outcome you want. And the most powerful tool Mike suggested to do that is the simple act of journaling. So, Mike, we talk in Sandler about improving your batting average, BAT, which stands for behavior, attitude, and technique. Take our listeners through an overview of why those three components make up success.
Jim, I think they make up success, number one, because they're very simple. And I think when we hone in to those simple basic facts and we execute them well, we find success. I think when we try to get creative is when we start to lose sight of the things that got us to where we are and how can we get better at that. Most people, as you know, they want the technique. They want a different script or they want a different way to do it. And I don't see people failing because they lack methodology. I see people failing because they lack the thinking and the belief to execute on the things that they already know. And as those of us that are versed in Sandler know, 98% of the success that we have comes from the behaviors that we do and the attitudes that we take with us. So I think there's a lot to be said about how we act and how we feel about the things that we're doing.
So if you can envision a pyramid, the top of the pyramid is attitude, the left-hand side is behavior, the right-hand base is technique. Take us through attitude. Define what that is based on on your perception, and what do we do to engineer a change in what we think?
I think our attitude is just our overall thought process about us and about the situations that we find ourselves in and about this world that we live in. And I think that there are some core common attitudinal principles that people need to own. And I think one of the big things, Jim, is people just need to decide. They need to have a decided heart. If you look at greatness, greatness of any kind never came through indecision. People don't just drift into greatness. There was a decision that someone made in order to be great. And I think part of that belief is, and this may sound cold and that's not my intent, but just recognizing the dynamics that we live in, common people go nowhere. You have to be very uncommon in order to make a mark, a significant mark in this world. And I think understanding that we need to be comfortable being uncomfortable, we're going to go through those rough times and we're going to just learn from those rough times, and understanding that the things that happen to me don't define who I am, but they start to create who I am if I leverage them the right way. I think our whole thought process is very important.
One of the behaviors that we engage in to change our thought process is to really create these positive affirmations that script our perspective. You shared a little bit about that in the first segment. Take us through the mechanics of building an affirmation, and then what do I do to reprogram my thinking so that I no longer live that common life, but I become extraordinary?
So what I started to do first, Jim, was I started to recognize the thought processes and the things that I would say to myself that were not serving me right. And I started to journal the counter thought to that. So if I had to think specific things about myself or about my belief in life that I really wanted to believe, what would those things sound like? So I would take my journal literally every morning and I would write things down like, I am 10 times the return on the investment. I'm building a house of bricks. I'm a sales and business guru. I cure sales cancer. Companies spend money with me because I'm worth it. My convictions are strong, so my daily decisions are easy. And those are things at the time I really didn't believe about myself. I wanted to believe them, but when I really was honest with myself, I didn't believe them. So I would write things down that I needed to believe and that I really wanted to believe about myself. And over time, I started to believe them, and I started to look for reasons why I was right. And one of the very first exercises I did when I sort of had that, oh crap moment, I own a company and now I'm responsible for paying debt and other people's lives right. That are working here, yeah. Was just to really get down to the brass tacks of what it is that I'm trying to control, what I'm trying to build. So just putting that plan in place and journaling those specific thoughts that I would need to have in order to get me there, I think was very important.
So what Mike is suggesting, if thought precedes actions, I need to script my thought to paint the picture of the action that will lead to success. And now that moves me to the behavior segment of the triangle. What happens next, Mike?
I think behaviors, first and foremost, start with goals. You know, not a lot of people, not a lot. It's not the norm for people to have structured, written down, specific, measurable, attainable goals. And I think because that puts people in a position of failing, and a lot of people don't like that. You know, to me, goals equal motivation. And of the hundreds of companies, Jim, that, you know, you and I have worked with, and the thousands of salespeople that we've touched over the years, it's hard to find someone that's unmotivated, that seriously tracks and keeps goals. So I think goals equal motivation. If you want to get motivated, get serious about your goals and understand that those goals aren't going to be attained very easily. We have to do uncommon things to attain those goals. So getting that goal process structured, I think the second thing we need to do is come up with a plan as to how we're going to actually achieve the goal. And does my plan work on paper? Does it make sense? So if I could script out my game plan as to how I'm going to accomplish a goal, what do I need to do? How much of it do I need to do? When do I need to do it? And that is realistic. If I'm tracking to that plan and I'm fine-tuning it along the way and making my adjustments where I see that they need to be made, I can't see failing as an option. And nothing becomes dynamic until it becomes specific. So if I want a very dynamic life, I have to get specific about what I want. If I want a dynamic prospecting arena for my sales efforts, I got to get specific with that, you know? And that's true for anything. Heck, if I want a dynamic marriage, I have to get specific with what that looks like and how I'm going to create that.
So you said nothing becomes dynamic
until it becomes specific.
Until it becomes specific. So being specific is really about taking that plan into maybe even as granular as daily actions. What would that look like?
Correct. So you know, most people are big picture. I see most people when it comes to their behaviors and their goals. It's like it's the end of the year. Let's throw a dart against the wall and then go draw a bullseye around it. You know, that's what we meant to do. You know, and it's hard for me to win the year if I'm not winning each quarter. And it's hard for me to win each quarter if I'm not winning the months in the quarter. And I certainly can't win the month if I'm not winning the week. And I can't win the week if I don't win the day. So today, what do I need to do today? Given the resources that we have, time is the only one on this planet that's equal for everybody. I've got a certain amount of time each day. Get specific about what I need to accomplish in relation to where I want to go and put a plan in place and act upon that plan, and you can bet on the outcome.
I think one of the things that keeps people from setting goals is they see a goal as something very rigid, and it's either a pass or fail. So talk a little bit about the fine-tuning aspect of goal setting.
And that's a good point. And I think we have to kind of shed the way that we're taught about goals and our perception about goals. Goals should never be at the end of a road. Goals should be the road. So each and every day in my quest to get to where I want to go, that specific day should have goal activity. And if I'm winning those goal activities, it's going to add up to the big picture, you know. And when it comes to goals, I don't care that people set goals and they don't achieve them as much as I care about they set goals and they achieve them, but the goal is too small.
So I have to be willing to set that goal that is a big enough stretch that I may not get it, because that's where I become extraordinary.
Correct. I read an interesting quirlote. At the time, Ella Johnson Sirleaf was the president of Liberia, and she said, if your dreams don't scare you, they're not big enough. So let's create some massive goals that get us just a little bit on edge.
That's awesome. Mike, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Thanks, Jim. It's 330-926-9924, and they can email me at mjones@sandler.com.
And I'm Jim Stevens, the local president of Sandler Training here in Idaho. Thank you so much for inviting me into your world and making us a part of your weekend. Our calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. It's things like the decision to not control my growth, the failure to prioritize dealing with marketplace rejection and creating the company that I know I really want and deserve, tolerating chaos and volatility, learning the hard way through trial and error. If you're ready to give up the insanity of doing the same thing, expecting different results, call me at 208-429-9275. That's Jim Stevens at 208-429-9275. And let us know that you need help. We will do the rest. Have a great weekend. Remember, if you measure it, you will manage it.